Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life.
Welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Lyle.
And today we're going to talk about Secrets of Blackmoor, the true history of Dungeons & Dragons, a documentary by Griff Morgan.
Yep, and Chris Graves.
Chris Graves and Ivy Morgan, edited. And the composer was Alex Karlamov. So this is volume one, The Evolution of the Role-Playing Game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. At least a two-part documentary.
Yes.
You were saying that he had like although he has 200, Griff was saying that he has 200 hours of video, they're actually re-interviewing these people.
Oh, wow.
I saw a post the other month, so for part two, yeah.
Oh, excellent.
But what is part one?
Right.
Yeah, so part one, The Evolution of Role-Playing, it's a documentary about the origins of the role-playing game. Blackmoor, for people who aren't familiar, was created by Dave Arneson. And Dave Arneson, if you look at the original Dungeons & Dragons, the white boxes, it says Gary Gygax and Dave Arneson, so the co-creator of Dungeons & Dragons. Right. But before Dungeons & Dragons, he was part of this group called the Twin City Gamers. Mm-hmm. And Secrets of Blackmoor is their story,
right,
about the Twin City Gamers gaming group.
Mm-hmm.
Not only Blackmoor, but the other games that they played. And what this actually isn't, despite the subtitle, you know, The True History of Dungeons & Dragons, this isn't just the documentary about Dungeons & Dragons. In fact, it's taking place pretty much before Gary Gygax comes into the story.
Right.
So it's really about the history of role-playing games and how role-playing games come to be, and just not this particular role-playing game, but the idea of role-playing games.
Right.
And so if you're not particularly interested in Blackmoor, the campaign setting, that's fine. That's going to be in part two, or more of this is going to be in part two, called Imaginary Worlds.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not interested in Dungeons and Dragons, that's fine too, as well. That might play more in part two, but here, this is for somebody, or just anybody who's interested in role-playing games or interested in game design. So if you are really interested in Powered by the Apocalypse and that's all you like to play, then that's fine. You can watch this and definitely appreciate these stories and what's going on. Or if you do like Dungeons and Dragons, you're definitely going to appreciate that as well. So it's for any role player. And
yeah.
I think, just because of the name, some people might dismiss it.
Mm-hmm. And the documentary itself starts out in a pretty bold way. They have a video clip of Dave Arneson.
Yeah, and we should say, like, Dave Arneson passed away a few years ago, so they weren't able to interview him, but they were able to interview the Twin City Gamers, also Dave Arneson's father and his daughter, who I think is part of the new Twin City Gamers.
Right.
Like you said, they start with a clip of Dave Arneson, and they bookend the documentary with clips of Dave Arneson, yeah. But the format of the documentary is talking heads, you know, where they take these people and you can hear some questions, but it's mostly these people relating what happened. So it's very much like the primary source of that. It's not the filmmaker's interpretation of what happened, reading stuff. It's these people that were there telling you exactly what they experienced and how things came to be. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and after the Dave Arneson video, they show the reunion of the Blackmoor bunch playing their annual game of Blackmoor that is done the same way that it was done when Dave Arneson was still alive. And so it's both a happy occasion and sad because he's not there, but they're paying tribute. It's a tribute to the creator.
Yeah, I mean, they were annual tradition, and the first of many surprises was they're not actually playing Dungeons & Dragons.
Right.
They're playing their game.
Yes.
The game that predates Dungeons & Dragons.
Right.
And it's very free form.
Yes,
and that.
Yes.
Yeah, so...
Yeah,
that
so it's... Yeah, it's Dave Arneson's ping pong table covered with, you know, brown butcher paper with maps drawn on it.
Yeah.
And all of the rules are in the Game Master's head. They're not referring to any rule books or anything printed. And there's just pencils, paper, and dice.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. And we're going to say, like, this review, we enjoyed the documentary. So if you just wanted for that, yeah, that's good. Go watch the documentary. And when we do, we talk about the surprises or experience watching the documentary, we're really going to avoid giving or spoiling the documentary for you, because I mean, these surprises are better coming from them, you know, because so, like, we want you to experience the documentary the way we did. And yeah, you're like, wow, I didn't know that. Instead of us telling you all the good stuff.
Right. And the documentary starts out in the discussion of role-playing by defining what is a role-playing game.
Yeah, that was an interesting choice. Yeah, because you would think that anybody that was, you know, would be interested in Secrets of Blackmoor would be familiar with what a role-playing game is.
Right. Yeah. And I think the reason for doing that is they wanted to help you understand how these things evolved. It wasn't just, oh, we want to do this and let's create a system for it. It was a gradual evolution and a contribution of different people with different systems. You know, they were taking different bits and pieces from wargaming or other types of games to create what we now understand as a role-playing game. So by giving that definition, you can see where all of those pieces are coming from.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, prior to watching the documentary, Griffith said that, you know, is there like a real clear definition of what role-playing is? So he wanted to help contribute to that definition, or him and Chris Graves wanted to help contribute to that definition. So yeah, they kind of provide that, but like you were saying before, then it really sets up, how all the, here are the pieces.
Right.
Now we're going to watch the rest of the documentary, which is going to get into where did these different pieces come from.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought that was really good. And another thing I thought it also helped set up is, because he's describing this and you think, oh, well, I know this, but he's also sets up, like, to the uninitiated, role-playing games can be really strange or a really alien concept. And now, like 40 years later, like, we don't appreciate how unusual this style of game is for a lot of people.
Right.
And then you watch, you know, what they're saying, and, you know, I think the person who ran the first role-playing session, David Wesley, he later he wrote something that had to explain on paper, you know, take what was in his head and write on paper, you know, what this game was about. And I'm not going to tell you what particular tool he uses in order to convey what a role-playing game is, but the tool he uses is actually still in use. And when people write, somebody who's writing a role-playing game right now is probably including this in their rule book because it's so necessary. And then you realize, you like, yeah, I guess you would need that to understand what this game is. And like, everybody's writing a role-playing game should be assuming that this is going to be somebody's first role-playing game.
Right.
Yeah. Well, maybe not some games that out there. So that was really surprising. Like, I should have expected that, but then you watch it and you're like, wow, that was there from the very beginning. Like, something like that. This wasn't something that, you know, 10 years later, people are like, you know, we really should kind of add that when we write rule books. Like, no, it was there from the beginning. So that was really surprising. And yeah, you get that, you know, like, unlike, you know, I think some people take issue with, you know, role playing and Dungeons and Dragons being synonymous. But Dungeons and Dragons actually provides a shorthand. So, like, if you're playing Vampire or if you're playing Monster Hearts and somebody goes, well, is that like Dungeons and Dragons? You're like, yeah, it's kind of like Dungeons and Dragons, except we're teenagers in high school playing different monsters and it's like in the modern time, right? But, you know, you might not like that, but it actually makes it easier to somebody who's unfamiliar with role-playing games to kind of understand what you're doing.
Yes.
Or what you're inviting them to do. And there, they didn't have that.
Right.
No.
Yeah, that's true.
I thought David Arneson's father, and you see him, and the man is still really active, so you realize just how young Dave Arneson was when he passed away. But he does a really good job, like, taking us back to when he was watching no, not really watching over, but because they were in the basement, but you know, his thoughts when his son was first playing war games, mm-hmm. and then other games, and he's just like, well, you know, what are they doing?
Mm.
And like his, you know, what, how he viewed it as an outsider. And I thought that was really good to also really reinforce that these are just like really unusual things that they were doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was good to see his daughter involved in the gaming group. And so you're seeing the next yeah. generation continuing. So we saw the reaction of his parents' generation yeah. and then his kids actually participating. Yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. We talked about the bookends. Like he starts with, you know, like David Arneson talking about the legal issues that, mm-hmm. that came about. And so you might think if you watch that initial clip that, oh, this is going to be a documentary of the Arneson versus Gygax, mm-hmm. over who should get credit for D&D or sharing the credit for Dungeons & Dragons. And people unfamiliar, when Dave Arneson is on the original Dungeons & Dragons, his name is on that, but then when Advanced Dungeons & Dragons comes out, his name right. is not included.
Right, and he had left TSR at that yeah. point as well. Right.
So you might think, oh, this is going to be the story of the Battle of Credit and with Gary Gygax, but it very much isn't.
Right.
Gary Gygax does not appear very much in this documentary.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I thought, I wonder if that's going to be not, I guess, disappointing, but a kind of a bait and switch.
Mm.
But then I realize, like watching it, it's like it's actually introducing the idea of credit.
Yes.
And
yes.
then you might think, oh, everybody's giving credit to Gary Gygax, and then people a little bit more in the know go, oh no, there's also Dave Arneson. But this is a story with the Twin City Gamers, and it's about credit, but it's giving credit to like everybody.
Yes. Right.
So not only, of course, David Arneson, but also David Wesley and David McGarry, who made Dungeon.
Right.
Before Dungeons and Dragons, yes. there was Dungeon.
Yes.
And the other people that were part of the Twin City Gamers.
Mm.
So I thought that was actually a smart move.
Mm-hmm.
And then also you're kind of waiting, when's Gary Gygax going to come into this thing? When's Gary Gygax? And then you realize, like, by the time this role-playing torch gets passed to Gary Gygax, I mean, the torch is already lit.
Mm, yes.
Like, he runs with it, and him and Dave Arneson create Dungeons & Dragons, but they hand a pretty substantial concept or a pretty substantial idea for a game to Gygax. It wasn't hey, let's create a new game together.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was really surprising, and I thought that they had that initial clip kind of sets that up,
because mm-hmm.
you're kind of waiting, and you're like, oh.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah. So,
yeah, that's great.
But again, that was really unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
when you watch this documentary. So,
no, yeah, yeah, that's very true. Yeah, and where a lot of contributions came from,
yeah.
like where certain character classes or races came from. It's yeah. it's very interesting. Just the players' needs or what they wanted to do in the game is why certain things exist or why certain things were created. And these are the first people to do that. The first people mm-hmm. to play as thieves or paladins or dwarves.
Yeah, actually, the dwarves is my favorite story. Like mm-hmm. how the first dwarf came to be. And you're listening to a real funny end to that story. But yeah, and you watch, and it's like not like somebody said, like, okay, we need a thief.
right.
So who wants to be the thief? It's just like somebody sort of playing their character, like someone would be like a little bit roguish,
right,
a little bit light fingered. yeah, so yeah, that was good.
Mm-hmm.
Another big surprise, and I think this is really gonna, I don't know, change people's minds, or you know, sometimes you know I hear people nowadays when they talk about early Dungeons and Dragons, and they say, it was kind of like these war gamers kind of making a slight extension in the role playing, and it's actually not what you would think.
Yes.
The very first game session, you're playing that really avant-garde role playing game, and you know, hey, I'm a big fan of Vampire, and you're thinking like, oh, I'm, you know, all we do is sit around the table and do political intrigue with the, you know, the Prince of Detroit or Prince of Chicago, and you're like, and you're patting yourself on the back. No. That is not as esoteric or unusual as the very first RPG session and the types of characters that were there. And that was called Brownstein?
Mm-hmm.
Brownstein?
Right.
Frankenstein? Brownstein? yeah. And that's based on, it's actually set in the Napoleonic era.
Right.
And you think, oh, because it was, they were playing soldiers. No, no, no. You got to watch the documentary. And if you can seriously come back and tell me that your RPG sessions are as mundane, I don't know.
Mm.
You know, somebody described David Duchovny's acting as that he dares to be boring. And if somebody were to explain that scenario to me, it was like, oh, that kind of sounds boring. Is that my character? Yeah, but then they just ran with it. And the fact that these war gamers would run with a scenario like that, you're just like, wow, that's more RPG chops than I have. Yeah.
Right.
So your preconceptions, I think, might be challenged if when you watch this documentary of what early role-playing was like. Mm. Yeah.
And you made a good point about the lesson that was learned by the game master in that very first session.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. So the first, I guess they used the term referee.
Mm-hmm.
So we use that. The first referee was David Wesley.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there was a lesson there. So if you're like, I mean, people who have already ran a game, they're going to go, yeah, I definitely need to learn that. Unfortunately, it took me 6 sessions or even 3 campaigns to learn this lesson. But it was right there from the beginning.
Yes.
And David Wesley didn't learn it right away.
Mm-hmm.
And we all get that. And it deals with referee or game master expectations versus player expectations, like what makes a fun game. Mm-hmm. And then you watch that and when those two coincide or when they can finally meet, then you got a really successful game. And that was right there from the beginning.
Yeah.
So yeah, absolutely. And again, that shouldn't surprise me, but it did surprise me that, hey, it was there. Like there was so much.
Mm.
So what they were playing, I think probably the thing that would be most foreign for us now is that so much of it was in their head.
Right.
Yeah. And people would be surprised, despite the fact that these were war gamers, who created this game or were playing this game, how combat wasn't even supposed to be a part of the first session.
Right.
So again, what the game master plans versus what the players are going to end up doing right there from the first session. Yeah. And now there's combat in this. Okay. Let's roll with it. Yeah.
Right.
So. And yeah, David Arneson died in the first session early
in
the game. I said right there, I was like, players like, hey, you shouldn't have done that, but now here's your consequences. Yeah. 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 I think that was what was so fun about watching the documentary is there's so many things I didn't expect and just, oh, okay. I kind of didn't realize that was the first session or, okay, I thought you would have prepared for combat in the first session. Okay. No. Yeah. Cause I think what people kind of get they follow maybe too closely Dungeons and Dragons Evolution, so they know. I know chainmail was there, which was war game rules for medieval or fantasy games. And then from chainmail, they made Dungeons and Dragons, and you're like, not exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Not exactly. You have to watch, when Gary Gygax gets involved, chainmail does exist.
Yes.
But there's something, there's a huge other portion that I guess we'll call it the Brownstein. The Brownstein portion or the Blackmore portion that gets added to that. And so you take your the narrative gaming people. I mean, that's probably that side, so I think that was there from the beginning.
Yeah.
I don't think that's something that evolved and we kind of grew up and then thought, oh, gaming can be much more. It was actually there from the very first session.
Yeah. It's true.
And I think it's really important to have a documentary like this because you're still getting the people that were actually there. I mean, they would have been in the 70s, about college age,
right?
Because I think David Wesley was going to college at the time. Arneson was a little bit younger than him, but so he came back from college and then he runs this first RPG session. So people who are college age in the 70s, so you really got to record and get down what it was like and what happened at the time. I don't know if people are familiar with the documentary series World at War. but I think it was a BBC production, and Laurence Olivier narrated it. But yeah, they had people that were alive during World War II, either, you know, in combat or on the home front, mm-hmm. yeah, sharing their stories. And it's good to do that for role-playing and this and get this history. So we're not having people, you know, relating what they've heard about what happened. It's right. These people are telling their own stories, and they're good storytellers. I mean, I was actually surprised because we had interviewed Griff Morgan for our podcast while he was while they were working on editing the documentary, and we were, you know, not terribly good interviewers. So if you watch or you listen to our interview, it's Griff speaking. Because what had happened is we kind of had our questions, but this guy didn't shut up. Mm-hmm. He just kept talking and telling stories, and which may or may not have matched our questions. So we had about 3 hours of this interview, and we were like, what do we do? Because this guy likes to talk. And so we decided, okay, we'll just capture the stories. And then that's how we released in a few parts. We released the portions of the interview, which was just him telling the story, not even our questions. So we thought, wow, this documentary will probably be a lot of him talking. And it's not, because probably the same scenario is he's got people that are more than willing to talk and really good at explaining and telling a story. Mm-hmm. So we captured that. I mean, there's Robert Kuntz, I think I pronounced that correctly. And people familiar with Dungeons & Dragons would recognize that name. It's been on...
Greyhawk?
Yeah, okay. So he comes from the Gary Gygax side, I believe. Yeah, and he's got a nice analogy of how things go together.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And so it was good. Mm-hmm. One guy at the end, kind of he's interviewing it all, and drops a bomb. Oh, I've never actually played Dungeons & Dragons. Okay. But he was there from the beginning. And but then you hear him say that, and it's like, that really helps highlight the separation between what they were doing and what becomes Dungeons and Dragons. Mm. Or I guess it becomes Dungeons and Dragons, but what they were doing versus what is or was Dungeons and Dragons at that time. Mm-hmm. And I think, yeah, that was really good.
And we got to see the opening of the last mint copy of Blackmoor, of the Blackmoor setting by the Judges Guild.
So they got the sun? Mm. You go, yeah, it was the sun, because he had drawn the maps when he was like a teenager. But as a collector, I was shocked. And it shows like all of these people were just like not only willing to give their time to tell their stories, but also just sharing stuff. They were sharing all that, you know, here's, you know, the first, you know, character stats. And,
oh, right. And, yeah.
Sharing that with the filmmakers. And, yeah, and like you said, like he holds up this thing. It was in a plastic bag, and it was like a test run. Yeah, the test run of the plastic bag. Yeah, and then he's like, oh, that's really cool that you've got that. And then he takes out an X-Acto knife, cuts it open. And I was like, oh my God, why are you doing that? But they realize it's like, this is, you know, we're talking about history, mm-hmm. and we got to share this history.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and he shared that. And then, yeah, of course, they open it up and you look at, what, you know, an actual physical copy of this this early role-playing game.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So yeah, there's a lot of, you really see the generosity of these people that were, you know, gave their time or gave the stuff that they had. It's the documentary itself is well done. I mean, nice camera work, nice setup. I think Chris Graves, he's the cinematographer. Mm-hmm. Really good editing, because they had like so many hours of footage. And then Griff does a good job of introducing, moving the story along, but they still, you know, had moments of spontaneity, mm-hmm. because you have that, like, maybe there was like a typewriter, talking about this typewriter, this really significant typewriter in the history of role playing. And it seemed like, do you want to see this typewriter? Or something like that must have happened.
right.
And he whips out his camera phone or something, because it's a completely different camera. But yeah, but just capturing that moment. And mm-hmm. then now we have it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And now we have like a little bit more to the story and a little bit more to the contributions of the different people. Mm. And there's too many to really name. Like,
oh, yeah.
But it's really surprising. like how people contributed to different things. And,
yeah, I think that was the biggest message from this first part is that the contributions, it was a gradual evolution, and there were contributions by everybody that was involved in playing the game, because they all, as players, they all had their own needs and wants of what the game experience was, and that's what became role-playing.
Yeah, and I mean, I would think, I hesitate to say a unique situation, but certainly, I'm not going to say, like, if people think, oh, well, we would have gotten role-playing eventually, you're like, maybe, maybe, but there was a lot of circumstances that needed to be there, or a lot of elements that needed to be there that helped to create that. Now, you know, I alluded to it, and I'm not going to tell you exactly what the first role-playing session was about, but I can imagine if I was a war gamer showing up for that and like, this is my character? Sorry, what am I doing? And it's like, what? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, but these people didn't do that. They went, okay, great. Let's run with it.
Mm-hmm.
So to have that, and Griff uses the term, which they didn't apply to stuff like this back in that day, but he uses the term incubator, mm-hmm. and saying that this was actually what would be described as a role-playing incubator.
Right.
But they just didn't have the term for it, but that's what it was. And yeah, it was, you know, if you didn't have certain types of people bringing different strengths in that, then it wouldn't have happened. Like, you know, mm-hmm. we talk about this typewriter. If that person wasn't there, then maybe we don't move on to the next step. So, and then you're also thinking like, oh, you know, now with the internet, it's really helped bring gamers together from a lot of communities. And then you watch, now people find a way. They just work with what they have.
Right.
Like the person working with the old library system, track down people.
Yes.
That was, you're like, yeah, I guess you would.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, yeah, when he's setting it up, and it's like people not familiar at the time might not understand this, but I was like, yeah, I remember that. You know, mm-hmm. I'm old enough to remember that, but I wouldn't have thought to do that. Yeah. And yeah, that was also interesting. I mean, what was it you were saying? Like the group that they form was like second only into like military college or something like that.
Yeah,
like the size of people that were doing these war games.
Right.
Yes. And they did it before they could just post stuff online. You know, they're using magazines, posting like ads on stuff like that.
Yeah.
Finding gamers. Yeah.
Yeah. And they even made reference to once they were enjoying the session and wanted to talk about like what was happening with their character, they just got on the phone with Dave Arneson and just continued.
Oh, that was a good story. Yeah. Like that person. Yeah. They're doing that over the phone.
Right,
yeah.
The technology of the time. Yeah.
And just, you know, imagine doing that. Like people are like, oh, you know, now we've got Roll20 or those other things. Mm-hmm. Was it Fantasy Grounds? Another popular one. And you're just like, or the phone.
Yeah.
And, yeah, imagine like trying to run a game, you know, just a referee on one end and one player at the other end. And you're just like, like you think you're clever now.
Right.
imagine that particular game, but imagine being that enthusiastic.
And I think it was definitely the, you know, the age of the players, a lot of maybe the older, more historical, you know, wargaming strategists that had just kind of dropped out of the group and allowed them to, you know, and because that maybe the thing that made them drop out was the move to fantasy away from historical.
That's a good story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe we could spoil that one.
Oh, right. Yeah. Because Dave Arneson was the youngest at the time. And, of course, the people that were well-versed in history, the necessity to kind of move away from history is you spend most of your time arguing, you know, what were the actual rifles that these soldiers would have had? This didn't exist at the time. At this battle, it would have been like this. So history exists, like history is in the past, and we know it. And fantasy is the unknown. So that kept the people that were historians or engineers kind of a little bit more off balance, and just letting them kind of go with the setting and go with the improvisation of the game.
Yeah, it freed them up. Yeah,
freed
like everybody at the table up. I mean, they can just. Not only did the game master not have to worry, or the referee at the time, have to worry about players interjecting with, no, that wasn't around at that time. Mm-hmm. But then the players could just go, oh, I want to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Can I? All right. Let's think of how we do that.
Yeah? Right. Right.
Or, you know, I read this and this story and let's use that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I hope, you know, I know we did a lot of teasers, you know, and we didn't like all these surprises. We're not telling you the stories. But, yeah, again, we want, if, if after watching this you're interested enough to go pursue the secrets of Blackmoor, then we want you to have the same experience as we did and just go, wow, oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. But and how can they, like, we actually have ordered
right.
physical copies. Unfortunately, we didn't, so we watched it online.
Yes.
Legally.
Right. Yeah. And yeah, so there was a successful Kickstarter that they used to produce the Blu-rays and DVDs, which I believe can be pre-ordered. And there's a Facebook group for Secrets of Blackmoor, as well as a Twitter Twitter account. And if you want to view the movie right now on streaming, it's vimeo.com. So just search for Secrets of Blackmoor, and you can either rent or purchase the HD version of the movie. And it's a great experience watching that. It's a very nice quality and very easy to navigate. So yeah, so we'll put a link in the description to the location on Vimeo where you can see Secrets of Blackmoor. And yeah, we encourage you to take a look. And there's also trailers on Vimeo as well, if you'd like to get a taste of, you know, what the interviews are like and how things are put together.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and also the physical copies, like DVDs and Blu-rays, are coming if they're not available already. Yeah, we have ours ordered, but we haven't received it yet. So that's all going to be available if you want that as well. So
So we'll put links to our interview that we did with Griff, the parts of that, as well as location of Secrets of Blackmoor, their Facebook and everything, so you can find that. And we would encourage you to. It was a very very great piece of history, and nice to see.
It's a piece of our history.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. As us, anybody who's interested in role playing or game design, I mean, this is your world at war.
Yes.
Yeah, and support indie filmmaking. So these people spent 6 years.
Yeah, 6 years.
And, you know, their own money and just a very small group of people to document something that maybe bigger companies should have been documenting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's true.
So they did it. All right. Bye.
Bye.
Drive-through RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive-through RPG, the one true source for RPGs.
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.